I'm a Raith Rovers fan. They're shite, but I love them.
This episode of the Oh No 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 podcast is sponsored by Dynamic Industrial Services, the rope access specialists. As long-time Raith Rovers supporters, we are very familiar with ropey performances. But if you need a service that's more Sam Stanton than Willie Accio, look no further than DIS. Operating across Scotland, they specialise in working at height, offering maintenance, inspection, repairs and more. So if you've got a problem at a height that even John Fredrickson can't reach, visit dynamicindustrialservices.co.uk to find out more. Thanks for joining us for this latest episode of the Oh No 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 podcast as we look back on the weekend that all but confirmed the end of the Rovers title challenge, with Dundee United remaining 6 points and 1,000 goals clear with just 2 games left to play. For the Rovers' part, they got back to winning ways on Friday night, a colossal performance from Kevin Dobrovsky, bringing another clean sheet and a 1-0 victory over sad, mad Duncan Ferguson's Galway Thistle. My name is Duncan Cameron, and to pick through all of that and more, I'm joined today by Robbie Weir. First of all, how are you, mate?
Yeah, really good. Looking forward to us absolutely scalping Morton 40-0 next week and doing society a favour and keeping our title challenge alive. Just for any United fans, congratulations on the league. It's done and dusted, and I'm not going to be sour grapes about it. So fair play, deserved it over the piece. League table doesn't lie, and yeah. Enjoy your celebrations.
Look, 40-0 is maybe a stretch. All we actually need is 4 9-0s. 2 for us, 2 against Dundee United. 9-0s happen. It's not beyond the realms of possibility. Maybe.
Wouldn't be the first time Mort have conceded 10 as well, if we can get to that number. So,
as a precedent. We've also got Carol Allison-Smith. How are you, Carol?
I'm very good. Yeah, just trying to do the sums, thinking how many do we actually need. But yeah, no, congratulations Dundee United. Enjoy the celebrations. You can now celebrate.
That's it. And we've got John Greer too. How are you, John?
I'm very well. Stuff you and I... Dundee United.
I was going to say, I feel like you're probably not in quite as magnanimous a mood as the other two. That's, yeah. Okay, listen, right, let's stick to that. Before we get on to Friday night and Cali Thistle, we can cheer ourselves up with that. Robbie, I'll come back to you on this. I think you've already kind of summed up your thoughts, but just a little bit more detail, please. Deserved winners over the piece, Dundee United?
Yeah, you can't argue with it. I think that we know clearly where we've fallen down, and it's been unfortunate. It shouldn't take away from the fact that we've had an insanely good season, but United have obviously got the job done, and we've got the playoffs to look forward to, which I still don't think is a huge disappointment. I said at the start of the season that I wouldn't be surprised if we finished second. Take them within, 3 or 4 games? Admittedly, probably about 5 or so, based on when they went ahead at Tannadice. Yeah, it's not really... I'm not going to look at that and be absolutely disappointing or crestfallen. What I'm really glad about is the fact that we've not fallen into a situation like Queen's Park or Arbroath did, where you take it to the final day and you're absolutely crushed, like we were against Alloa all those last few years ago. And then you've got to pick yourselves up for the playoffs. We've got a bit of time to rebound, I feel, to pick ourselves up. And I feel like Friday night was a perfect opportunity for that. And we've done that, getting a result against, frankly, a couple that I really just want to see relegated. I just want to see down. Just because they've had the Indian spell over us for the last 2 decades. They don't really offer much in terms of footballing-wise. They don't offer crowds. They seem to be quite hostile in terms of the way that they're set up, based on what I've heard, to sort of all the sort of technical side of things, like digital online offerings and things like that for fans viewing through streams. never really brought much to the table, and I'd be quite happy to see them gone. So fingers crossed that Queen's Park can do a job and stay up.
Yeah, and it's it was nice to see that the Rovers took Duncan Ferguson's advice and didn't down tools and just chuck it once they knew where they were going to be finishing and all that kind of stuff. I mean, honestly, that is a ridiculous thing to be coming in and saying. John, if we'd offered you second place at the start of the season, would you have snapped our hands off for that?
Yeah, I would have. I think the progression we've made this season is so much more important than congratulating Dundee United. We're 5 places above, 6 places above? No, 5 places above where we were last season. We've got 20, how many points further? 24 points, 25 points more than we had last season. You know, it's phenomenal the run we've been on. To take Dundee United to that length with them, to them having such a higher budget than us is quite phenomenal. The fact that we rattled them, and we did rattle them, has been tremendous. What's your phrase, rattling jimmies? That's what it's all about.
Rustling.
Rustling jimmies, okay. That's what it's all about. And it's great. You know, we now have... I would like Dundee United to lose their last two games and us to win our last two games. And they'll only have beaten us by goal difference.
Just to add to that, John, as well, I don't think anyone in our supports really lost their heads at the fact that we've lost the league, which has been very interesting to see. A lot of comments directed our way, understandable. We've all been of the same opinion that you give it large, you're going to get large back. But I've not seen anyone collectively lose their heads or anyone going mental on the Rovers side claiming that they've not deserved where they've been, other than you, John.
Can I also big up the team that were there on in the crowd on Friday singing a brilliant song about all the way to Inverness for fuck all? It was brilliant. They chanted that nearly all the way through the whole game, and I thought it was wonderful. And you know, we had a healthy support up there. Can I just say as well, to have beaten Inverness 3 times in a row has been wonderful, but to have played Inverness 4 games without Colin Stephen being near a game has been remarkable. So thank you if we ever did the referee situation there, because that was a joke, wasn't it, back in the day when we had them.
Some wild goings on there. Beforehand, Christina was kind of calling for Jamie Gullen to come back and kind of keep his positive impact going in these fixtures. And it's maybe just a scheduling thing, because he scored for Dundalk on Friday night.
That's good to hear.
Yeah,
he scored twice, scored did a he penalty. Not?
I thought it was one each. Could be wrong. I saw him scoring, I stopped checking.
Yeah.
I thought it finished one each because they were away.
Yeah, mate. Them.
I think it was the second goal. I think he scored a free kick and a penalty for them now. They've changed the manager, but yeah, it's maybe just he doesn't even need to be playing for the Rovers. Just actually the fact that the Rovers are playing Inverness and Jamie Gullen's still fully energised and getting involved. So that was nice to see. I'm just going to lift a couple of things directly from Ian Collin in the Courier today, because it goes to your point there, John, about how well we've done, not only compared to last season and the Rovers, but last season's champions. So Dundee, 63 points last season. The Rovers, 2 games still to play, have 65. The year before that, Kilmarnock won the league with 67. So the Rovers have got 2 games to go and are only 2 points off that, so could quite easily end up topping that as well. Now, to an extent, that's meaningless. You're only playing against the teams you're in the division with. But again, it goes to how good a season this has been. And obviously there are always going to be points where you'll look at it and go, oh, if only that had been different, or if only we'd clung on it here or gotten a better result there. But that's always going to be the case. And actually, I think Friday night, which we'll spend the bulk of this episode talking about, is almost the counterbalance to those kind of things, where you have games like that, where actually on the balance, are you the better team? Do you necessarily, quote-unquote, deserve 3 points? Like, maybe not. The point is, over the course of a season, you know, you only play every game once, and it's about eking out as many points as you can. And all this stuff about, you know, in the first quarter, you know, certainly before the new year, there was a lot of talk about lucky Raith Rovers was obviously the kind of headline-grabbing one. But even in more kind of nuanced conversation, there's this, oh, you can't keep winning games by one goal, and, you know, you'll run out of that eventually. But fundamentally, we're 3 games to the end of the season, and we're still doing it. Not doing it every single week, that would be ludicrous. But it's, you know, a lot of points on the board, surpassed any expectations I think anybody could have reasonably had at the beginning of the season. And yeah, it's testament, I think, to the effort and the ability that's gone into this season. And we have, I mean, you know, Dundee United, by the time they officially win the division, will either be one game or no games to spare, depending on how results go next weekend. So,
I would add to that, like, that it's very funny that you see so many people sort of picking up on the whole lucky Raith Rovers thing, as you say, because the chat about that started in about October or so, I think, and we just kept doing it, which was very, very amusing, because the whole narrative was, oh, Dundee United, come January, they'll rocket ahead, or come February, they'll see them off, come March, it'll be gone, come April. Well, finally reach April, and then you've got less than a month to spare, and then they finally win the league. I think you've got to give a lot of credit to Ian Murray, the backroom staff, people like John Potter, again the board, for putting it all in place to sort of look back at the season that we've had. And it's still not over yet, because we're one of the 2-5 clubs that have still got something to play for, because Kelty are 3 points off the playoffs. We are one of the 2-5 clubs that still has stuff to play for at the moment. So, yeah, it's there's still every chance that it could be a very good season for Rovers. Last weekend's results showed that Airdrie aren't invincible, or maybe just invincible against us, but Partick feel confident going into that playoff game. So we've got a chance to really sort of reset and just focus on what's to come, because everything from before is now pretty much irrelevant. We can all reset and go into these playoffs and high spirits, hopefully, if we can win our last 2 games.
I was quite pleased to see that Thistle result against Airdrie. Not just because, I mean, Airdrie get beat 4-0, that's always nice to see anyway. But I think it's going to be a nice thing to point to almost whatever happens now between third and fourth in that playoff. Because either it's going to be Thistle, who we have a very good record against, and we can point to that, say we've got a really good record against them, that's good. Or it'll be Airdrie, but it'll be an Airdrie side who've managed to overturn Thistle, who just beat them 4-0. Mm-hmm. So we can point to that and go, look, anything can happen. These are the playoffs. It doesn't matter what went before. You've got all this chance. So I think, effectively, I'm getting in early and just building a narrative that I'm going to enjoy either way.
Yeah. You want the 2 teams to go in and batter the absolute ever-loving each other.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, we get that extra week, plus we get the 2 weeks before, where we've got games where we can experiment, we can try. I know Leslie had sort of said about potentially playing Ross Matthews at right back, just in case St Johnston are the team that are in the final, so that he's got a bit of experience there. And I know that we'll come on to it, but obviously we saw Ian Murray experiment a little bit at points during Friday night's game with a selection, some players coming in that we maybe didn't expect, and again, change of formation at half-time, so.
Yeah, let's move on to that then, and we'll stick to it and let it take us into the game on Friday. So there were a handful of changes on this one. So Lewis Vaughan and Jack Hamilton kind of swapped places effectively with Kyle Turner and Zach Rudden in the starting lineup. But the biggest surprise was definitely the return of Dylan Corr for his, I think just his third league start of the season. Second up in Inverness. You must like it, are they? Carol, how surprised were you when you saw the team lines and Dylan Corr's name was in there?
I was really surprised. I think in all of our lineups that we've ever done for the last like 2 or 3 months, Dylan Corr has not even featured on anyone's. It might have been we would like to see him, but we know he's not coming in. It would be good if he was, but we know he's not coming in. And to see him not just be in the lineup, it was a massive surprise. Massive, massive surprise.
Yeah,
and not that there being that the only option. It's like, all right, we've got nothing else but Corr. It was he seemed to be the choice that they wanted to put in there as well.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting on a couple of fronts. I know Ian Murray said after the game, first of all, he made reference to, you know, sort of giving Dylan Corr more game time next season, which was just interesting to hear because I think as far as everyone's aware, he's out of contract. And, you know, without kind of reading too much into it, kind of based on everything that's happened up till this point, as I said, they only started 2 league games, you wouldn't think that really from anybody's point of view, it would be a foregone conclusion that he would be signing an extension. But whether there's something being agreed already, whether that's just Ian Murray talking kind of wishful thinking or what, I don't know. But interesting anyway that he made that reference to kind of giving him more game time next season. But also, you know, he was talking about the fact that he's obviously not played as much as he would have liked. And he says, you know, he's up against two really experienced centre-halves, which is kind of leaving the large part unspoken, which is that fundamentally he's actually been up against a central midfielder for most of the season and has been, you know, Scott Brown has been the preferred choice. But that, I think, is what was interesting about Friday night, because that he could have made that same choice again. Absolutely could have just played Scott Brown in defence again. Keith Watson, I think, muscle tightness, according to the BBC, which after 3 games in a week, it makes sense. John, in terms of the motivation behind that, do you think it is a case of, you know, it's the back end of the season, we're almost certainly going to finish second, so Ian Murray's just looking to give Dylan Corr a little bit extra game time? Or do you think that's a kind of a tactical change based on how things have gone recently, and this is actually something that he would have done anyway, even if we were, you know, still in the hunt?
Well, first of all, I was quite pleased to see Dylan Corr getting a start. I think it's maybe, you know, what you guys spoke about in the preview show, and you touched on Les sort of saying that maybe it's the time to use different options just so that we know that everybody. I think another one was that maybe Kevin will drop out one of the games to give Andy McNeil a 90 minutes under his belt, because there's no point going into a playoff with players not having any time under their belt. I thought it was quite funny as well that Dylan's mum obviously tweeted to say, "About time." So I thought that was quite good. But he came in and he did a very good job. I don't think anybody watching the game could have been disappointed in the way he played. I know he's a young player, and you saw him, I think he was getting a bit of advice from the players around him, which was good, and something that's always good to see. So I was pleased to see him playing, and I think he did pretty well.
Yeah, I agree with that on both counts. I was pleased to see him. I was definitely surprised. I did not expect to see him start, but yeah, absolutely pleased that he did. I think I'm on record as saying I would have liked to have seen quite a bit more from him over the course of this season. And I mean, to be honest, largely because he's a natural defender. It's not, you know, I've not seen enough of him to be saying, oh, I think he's really good and I think he should play more. Would like to have seen more from him. But on the evidence of Friday night, yeah, I thought he was absolutely fine. You know, he looked like someone who hadn't played an awful lot of football recently, which is fine because that's true. But yeah, did absolutely well. I thought he was kind of grew into the game almost. Second half, I thought he was pretty strong. Robbie, anything for you on Dylan Corr, or indeed anything else to do with the way that Ian Murray chose to set up going into this one?
Yeah, it was great to see Dylan get involved. I think that it's been a long time coming, and it's been a very strange situation where he's always been part of the squad and always seemed available for use, but we've just not used him. And I'm sure Ian Murray has his reasons for that. I know Ian Lattow had touched on it before and said that with a player like Dylan Corr, you really want to see him get as much game time as possible, because that's the only way that he's going to improve. He needs the raw experience of playing matches. And I think the same goes for the rest of the young lads. And we've seen Adam Masson and Callum Hanna go out on loan, along with Aaron Arnott as well. I think all of these guys, they need the game time, because for them, they'll have played youth football all up to a point. They'll have played youth football all up till they're 19, 20, and then suddenly the game's stopped because you can't get on because you're being used as a substitute, and then you're stopped playing football. So it'll be a long time without the actual on-pitch experience that they get other than outside of training, which is not really going to be the same intensity. Did really well against a Cali frontline, where the last time that Alex Samuel played against us, he got a hat-trick. Admittedly, I don't rate Alex Samuel as a player. I think he's absolutely right, to be honest. But still, he got a hat-trick the last time out. And Billy Mackay's a natural goal scorer, who's obviously had a bit of a poor season, but it doesn't stop the fact that he can crop up a goal. So fair play to the centre-backs and the defence overall for their performances. And overall, I was quite happy with how we set up. I thought that it was good to see Vaughan linking up with Hamilton up top. I know that Callum Smith started as well. I think that Callum Smith's hitting a bit of... might not be on the goal trail, but I think that his performances, there's a lot to be enthusiastic about from him recently. He's really stepped up to the plate. So, yeah, I was happy enough in terms of how we'd set up for the game. And Scott Brown in midfield's always a bonus. So, yeah.
Yeah, the... story of the first half, I thought, was very very set piece heavy. If you kind of spool through the highlights, because you're running late for a podcast recording like I did, it's a lot of Cali Thistle corner kicks, and there's a couple of free kicks kind of thrown in there for good measure. Vaughan had one that he put into the wall, which even the commentator on the BBC, whose name I can't remember actually, he was one of the usual ones. Even he was saying, he's like, he's trying to do it down at East End Park there, which, when I think even the commentators are calling it out, I think it's maybe a little bit too predictable. But to be fair, work from East End Park, and who knows, if I hadn't come off the wall, might have done for this one as well. But I think fair to say, or is it fair to say, Carol, that Cali Thistle had the better of that first half?
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised it was still 0-0 at halftime. There was a few moments of, that's a little bit too close. Yeah, they were quite, I wouldn't even say dominating. It wasn't like they were the better side. It was just that they had something more, a little bit more, a little bit pushing forward. I think our defence was the most solid I've seen it. It was, I don't know if it is that Scott Brown moving forward and Liam Dix taking a little bit more charge at the back, and Dabrowski can just concentrate on the ball, because there was very little communication between Dabrowski and the front, but he seemed to trust what they were doing and they seemed to trust him, which worked really well. It was put under a lot of pressure by Inverness in the first half, a lot of pressure.
So I think really the probably the one big notable moment in the first half was the first of several big saves from everybody's big pal, Kevin Dabrowski. John, this will have happened right in front of you, this first one. It's a kind of double save from Cammy Harper, who I thought was excellent at left-back for Cali Thistle. We'll talk about a bit more for the second half. First one is probably a relatively straightforward save, but the second one certainly isn't. Sticking about a huge right leg to get that away. Was that from the stand? Did that look like it was going in all the way?
Yeah, it did, and it was, you know, Kevin spread himself pretty well, and, at the time, it was noted that it was such a good save, you know, and he's going one way and then just puts his leg out. Similar to, did he save a penalty earlier in the season a bit like that?
against a certain club from in a Scottish Cup game where we thumped them.
Going one way, wasn't he? But, you know, Kevin was outstanding, you know, and brilliant. And it's only in games like that you realise, and a bit like when we were at Hampden, how vocal as a goalkeeper Kevin is. You know, for a guy that, I know that after the game he made great reference to the fact that it's his first season as a number one at a club, you know, and I think that has been a great thing that Kevin's, you know, he's got that vocal thing about him, so he's keeping everybody right as well as doing his own job. So, the big man deserved all the praise he got.
Absolutely, and I think it's easy to forget sometimes. First of all, that it is his first full season as a number one, because he doesn't play like that. You know, he's been excellent for the most part, for huge parts of the season. He's been excellent, so it doesn't look like it's his first full season. But also, it's easy to forget that his defence is chopping and changing all the time as well, which isn't easy for any goalkeeper. And yeah, I mean, Ian Murray was rightfully, you know, full of praise for him after the game, and I thought everything he said was absolutely spot on about him as well. And obviously, we've still got more to talk about with Kevin Dabrowski in the second half as well. Before we do that, there was a tactical change. I'm going to call it a rare half-time kind of tactical shift for Ian Murray. He doesn't tend to make these kind of big changes as early as that. But two substitutions and a change in formation as well. Now, he had said on the 1883 Q&A, he talked about using a back three, and it basically said that he likes it, but he's felt like he hasn't had as much opportunity to actually deploy it for a few different reasons, you know, kind of personnel, and it's more high risk. But he opted for that at halftime to kind of match up to Cali Thistle. So Sean Byrne and Dylan Easton came on for James Brown and Scott Brown. So it's a 3-5-2, and it's kind of unusual in as much as it's a 3-5-2. We don't have any wing backs. You get really two out and out wide players who you're asking to play as wing backs, which is a big ask almost. But Robbie, you already said that Callum Smith was excellent. Josh Mullen on the other side, asked to play as a wing back as well, I thought was excellent in that second half. How did you see that, Robbie, in terms of the impact that it had in the game and how these guys performed across that?
Yeah, it had a huge impact because I felt that our best spell in the game came immediately after half time, right up to when we scored, where really it was a case that you saw us look a lot more fluid going forward. We had a bit more time on the ball. And yeah, we just, for that first 5 minutes, we looked in control. And it wasn't really surprising to see us get a goal. I felt that the both substitutions, Dylan Easton's obviously came on, and he's quite willing to attack with the ball and just get at his feet and take players on. So to add him into the mix, and Sean Byrne for Scott Brown was a like-for-like change. It just gave us so much more going forward, and it was really noticeable in terms of the mentality, and the momentum of the game shifted for that briefest of spells, which really let us kick on and get the goal.
Yeah, and John, give us your thoughts on the goal. Again, the switching of ends, well, I brought this right in front of you, which is always nice. You get some of the talking points, you get a good view of them. So it kind of starts with Rovers' free kick that kind of goes out to Dylan Easton, who then, you can tell, having watched the first 45 minutes of very little happening, it's like, I'm just going to go and do something here, and does very well, kind of jinks his way through. Ball is cleared, and then it's Callum Smith in a kind of an unusual position, as he's one of the few men at the back. Lofts it forward, good ball, lovely little flick on from Murray, and then it's a brilliant finish. Just, give me your thoughts on that goal, please, John.
Well, first of all, on the changes, I thought it was good management by Ian Murray to take Scott Brown off, because early on, he committed a couple of fouls, then he got a booking, and he was maybe on a wee bit of a tightrope whether he'd get another booking. But the goal, as you say, we got the free kick. Dylan did an amazing run into the box. It comes out, and then on the evening, I wasn't even sure if we put the ball back in. But Ewan, as you say, Callum Smith plays the ball, and Ewan Murray has a great head flick, and then Lewis Vaughan does what Lewis Vaughan does, and he puts it away. There was a kind of wee pause where there was a thought, was he offside? But obviously, having seen it back multiple times is my want. I looked at it a few times at night. And brilliant finish, and a great goal. I was actually coming back from the toilet at the time, and I was going up the stairs, having turned round to watch this all take place, and I almost got knocked down as the rush of the Rovers players supporters went down as the Rovers players came over towards us. But that's just been an old man, really.
Come on, guys, try harder. You've got to knock down John Greer next time.
And Robbie, just on the actual finish itself, that's a hell of a finish, is it not?
Oh, it's tremendous. He's done so well to adjust himself. And look, Lewis Vaughan, it's almost just cliched at this point that, like, it's just been great to see him get a full season under his belt. Without any issues, and to get that time. And I know that there's been a bit of fatigue over and management of how he's played over the last few weeks, but just such an asset. I've got to give a lot of credit to Ewan Murray for the flick on as well, because it was so deft and it just put it right into his path. So fair play to him for how well he's managed to get that right into the feet of Vaughan. But I think it was mentioned before that a lot of players would just smash it first time, but he's sort of shown a bit of deftness to get it onto his right foot and take it away from Mark Richards. So, yeah. Again, just superb goal. And that's football for you. It's football 101, where you can create all the chances in the world. And we've had this happen to us so many times as a club, where you see game management being a thing. I think particularly in terms of the Queen's Park at home game, when we lost 2-1 to them and Sean Welsh scored. You can create all the chances in the world, but it doesn't matter if you're not going to take them. And then the opposition takes their one, which is exactly what we did. We didn't create so many clear-cut chances. It's all absolutely irrelevant, because the score, it ended 1-0, and it doesn't even matter, because we've got 3 points and we're way down the road. So, brilliant.
Yeah, and I think that you're right. And it's also kind of speaks to the pattern of the game as well. Like, once you go 1-0 up against a side like Cali, who, you know, it's no secret that they struggle to score goals, there's no onus on you to go out and kind of really press the game. You know, obviously, Cali had chances. The Rovers were riding their luck a bit at times. But there was no urgency required for the Rovers once they had that goal. Carol, anything you want to add on that goal?
Just lovely wee Vaughan. I just think it was amazing, absolutely amazing. But it looks like he's obviously doing this in training as well. That wasn't just a fluke goal that he was surprised. He knew exactly what he was doing. And Ian Murray mentions a lot what he sees in training, and he's obviously seeing something fantastic in Louis Vaughan this season. And we are so lucky to have him, because I think we've said it many a times, he would have been snapped up by someone else. It's just, if when he's on the pitch, you're like, it's not if or might he score, it's when will he score. And this season they have been beautiful. And that one on Friday was just Italian kish fantastico.
I just don't think there's many other strikers in the league who they might still score that chance. You know, it's you're being flicked on into the box with only the keeper at bait. You might still score. I don't think many of them actually take that finish that really just takes it away from the goalkeeper. I think Ian Murray said they'll try and just smash that with a left foot. It might still end up goal, but he really takes any doubt out of it by just lifting it away from the goalkeeper before he's had a chance to set himself. John, I'm going to come back to you just for the next kind of couple of incidents. So, well, Alex Samuel hits the post with a decent shot for Cali Thistle, but then there's sort of two chances or two incidents kind of really quite close to one another. Zach Rudden involved in both. So there's one ball kind of gets zipped into him by Callum Smith and he sort of clips it towards the goal and it kind of flies just wide of the post. And then just after that, there is a shout for a penalty as he kind of nips in front of a defender. Tell me how you felt about those two in the ground and if you've seen them back since.
Yeah, Zach came on. I think Jack Hamilton had taken about a heavy knock where the guy actually trod on his foot, didn't he? And he then went off and Zach came on and Zach does what Zach does. He got on the end of that one and I thought he was going to score. And then the one we were all claiming for a penalty, it was the one where he came from behind the defender, but the defender clearly caught him. And I was quite surprised was it Ewan Anderson, the referee?
Yes.
I thought he would have, I was shouting for him to give the penalty. Having seen it again, I've seen it one angle and it doesn't look like a penalty, and then I've seen another angle and it looks like a clear penalty. So maybe the referee will give him the benefit of the doubt, but I was shouting for a penalty at the time. And
yeah, I think with the BBC coverage, there's sort of three angles, and on the first two, I can't remember if it was Billy Dodge during the game or if it was afterwards, maybe Michael Stewart. They show the first two angles, and he's like, not sure. Sees the third one, he's like, oh no, actually no, that is definitely a penalty. Like to be fair to the referee, it's the angle from behind the goal. Really is the conclusive one. It's very much the opposite angle he's got. But he is pretty close to it, and it looks to me like it's very much a clear penalty on that. And on the chance just before it, I thought they were being a little bit harsh on Zach Rudd. On the telly, they were just being a little bit kind of critical, a kind of missed opportunity. For me, he's just, and it's, you know, in order to get there before the defender, he's just a little bit too far beyond the near post. So as he gets that kind of clipped touch across it, he can only really sort of angle the ball 90 degrees. And if he's beyond the goal, it's never going to go in. It would have needed a kind of a touch and then to put it back across the goalkeeper, which would be very difficult. I thought it was a tricky chance. And then what we get in is, I think this is the pick of the bunch, save-wise. I'm willing to be disagreed with on that, but I thought this was the most kind of aesthetically pleasing one. Robbie is Kim Dabrowski gets down to his left, strongest wrists in the business, and somehow manages to not only keep this out but put it over the bar. Tell me anything you want to about that save, please.
Right, it's funny because you think back to like the season. And I know that you spoke earlier on about like it's his first season really in sort of football. Being a goalkeeper is very much where you go look at the average age of keepers, and generally it tends to be a bit on the higher side because you can play longer as a goalkeeper. So I think that it's really sort of a good season for Kevin Dabrowski in the sense that he's going to have gained so much experience. And you look back to the mistakes that he has made, and he has obviously clearly had a few games, like you think Queen's Park at home, Air United at home, and the Arbroath away, where he's just had sort of errors that have cropped up. But he'll have learned so much from those. And then you get performances like Friday night, where he was like trending very, very high in the UK on Twitter for just his performance overall and the superlatives that people were levelling his way. A lot of Hibs fans saying that they just wish they'd never left. And that a lot of people linking him as well to sort of to say, yeah, this is a player that we should be looking at in the summer. Obviously, he's under contract with us and you would hope that he'll be saying past the summer. But yeah, just a very, very good player and a very good guy. And it was just an excellent save. He's done so well to tip that away. Just his performance in general, he's just you know that he's always going to have games like that, and it's part of the modern keeper. I know that we've spoken about it at length, that keepers are very different to how they were even 10 years ago. Such a likeable guy, and it's just great to see him have another stellar performance for us. So more of the same, hopefully, going into the playoffs, and hopefully full of confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll pretend to have a discussion about Man of the Match in a minute. but I think it might be a foregone conclusion. The runner-up might well end up being the crossbar as well. Kind of came to our aid twice in the space of about 5 seconds as well. In that second half, I thought the second one was a particularly poor miss. Actually, I think
was that Jamie Carragher's son?
Yes, I can't remember what his first name is now, but it's James. It is. James Carragher. Okay, I should have got that. I think he's got enough time to get that slightly further down. But thanks, James, anyway, for not doing that. The only other one I wanted to mention, actually, was the longer that second half went on, and Callie, understandably, what we're trying to pile forward, I thought Josh Mullen was excellent. And just to kind of single him out for a bit of praise, because, as we said at half-time, Rovers are playing a 3-5-2. Everybody talks about 3-5-2. You look at the way Callie played a 3-5-2. It is ostensibly five defenders. You shouldn't really call it a 5-3-2, but nobody likes doing that because it makes it sound more defensive than it is. But with Rovers, it was literally a 3-5-2. You've only got three defenders on the park. And Josh Mullen and Callum Smith, you know, at half-time, you're telling them, right, you're basically doing a duo. You're getting forward when you can, but you're defending when you need to as well. But the longer that second half went on, Josh Mullen is up against Cameron Harper, who I think we mentioned pre-match, he's getting 9 assists, I think, in the division, which is the highest for a defender by a mile. In a really quite a poor Cali Thistle team, I think he's been excellent all season. And as that second half goes on, he's effectively operating as a winger, which forces Josh Mullen to then have to operate basically as a fullback. And I just thought that, you know, he's out of his comfort zone, and I thought he did excellently there. Josh Mullen just stuck to his task, did what he had to do, tried to get forward when he could as well to get us out. So, as I say, I think as far as I'm concerned, listen, nobody's going to get within a country mile of Kevin Dabrowski for Man of the Match. But I thought Josh Mullen just deserved a bit of praise for his performance there, because, as I say, it's not, I don't imagine playing wing back is the role he would pick for himself on any given Saturday or Friday. But yeah, thought he did really well on that.
See, on the praise front, just one final point before we wrap this up. There should almost be a sort of Soviet-esque style propaganda music playing over the top of this, playing out from South Ayrshire, because, yeah, the unbeaten captain has continued. Graham Meldrum might not have asked for this, but he's going to get it anyway. Our unbeaten captain is Liam Dick, putting in a really good performance as part of a back three in that second half. And the run continues. So I'm all on board Graham Meldrum's train for Dickle for captain for the playoffs, and that will see us reach the top flight.
Yeah, it's actually just on the top, when you say the back three, remind me there as well. I thought Dylan Carr looked more comfortable in the back three, which is probably understandable. You've got someone else in that kind of defence alongside them. But again, it's not the easiest, you know, for a defender to be in there when is, you know, obviously the last time we were up in Inverness, Josh Mullen played as the right back, and Dylan Carr kind of had to sort of adapt to that, not having a natural defender there. It's the same kind of dynamic. But I actually thought he did better with that. I thought he really grew into that second half. And he was excellent in the kind of latter stages in particular, got his head on some really kind of dangerous crosses and kept Cali Thistle lit. Right, any final thoughts on this game then before we wrap it up and move on?
Duncan Ferguson, get down. Like, aye, that's it. Just would love to see that. Absolutely would love to see that. Just, as I said right at the top of like the podcast, like, they just seem to bring nothing to the league. Like, they're just a club that you really want to see the back of. They've not really offered much to us in terms of points-wise. If you told me at the start of the season we were taking 9 points out of 12 from them, you would think, yeah, we are going to be having a good season if we're doing that. So I'm just really happy to see the back of them for this season. And hopefully, as I said, I know that Queen's Park will probably offer stiffer opposition for us next year because they've got the ability to chuck money out and their whole money ball system seems to have gone out the window. Lord Hawhey's decided, aye, we'll just sign players with much more experience now.
Yeah, just remove the ball part of their strategy. Yeah, just money.
But generally speaking, though, Cali Thistle, you tend to build up grudges over time and just a really bizarre wee fan base that they've got that just have ideas above their station. So I'd be very happy to see the back of them, frankly.
Really good opportunities for sledding come winter time, though, which is the main thing.
Yeah.
Ridiculous when woke up. I'd love to see them relegated as well. I just would. I'm really don't like Duncan Ferguson either. And I was actually trying to move on and I've stopped myself now. But did you see the pre-match interview that he did where, to be fair to the BBC, they could have easily avoided this, but they basically chinned him for what he'd said about our broth. And they're like, your own football club has had to apologise. Are you going to apologise as well?
Duncan Ferguson apologising for things that he's clearly done. Well, that'd be a new one.
And he's like, oh, did I say that? I don't think that's what I meant. Maybe my choice of words was wrong. It's like, wasn't it doublespeak? You came out and accused them of downing tools. There's no other way to interpret that.
It is very funny that our bros still have to play those teams, though, isn't it? That, like, you're accusing them of downing tools. Like, they're still to play them. Like, why would you do that? But, again... Weird. Yeah. He goes on holiday with Carlo Ancelotti, though, Big Dunk. Very, very strange character. I was explaining that to my brother, that, like, he got relegated with Forest Green, but he's, like, connected to probably the most successful manager in world football going on at the moment with Carlo Ancelotti. Just bizarre. Yeah. Just bizarre. Ancelotti's talking about winning Champions Leagues and playing Jude Bellingham and Vinny Jr., and yet you've got Duncan Ferguson signing 60 centre-backs.
Well, there's this line that comes up all the time where it's like, oh, Ancelotti wanted to take him to Real Madrid with him. Now, listen, if Ancelotti wanted to take him to Real Madrid, he'd be at Real Madrid.
Most 100%. The money that's at Real Madrid, he would have been there doing something like grass inspector, stud man, water boy, he would be there.
I've got this really strong desire to go and relegate Forest Green Rovers first. Sorry.
Oh, they're already gone. So, again, from the National League into the National League now as well. So, funny to see the back of them.
Right, anyway, that's probably enough of that. I think we started off being really magnanimous about Dundee United winning the league, and we really used up all of our being nice about other football clubs in the first 5 minutes there.
Got to laugh at someone.
Exactly. We need to...
Can I just finally say, Friday night for me was wonderful. It started off with a red pudding supper in King Nussey. We went to the game, we won. I got my photograph taken with the man of the match and we stuffed Duncan Ferguson, and that's from Jock McStay as well.
Aye, quite right. And that's, if Queen's Park could just... 6 points now in the end of the season, that'll be fine. Cali Thistle will look... and bother. I just don't think they're the kind of team you want to take in the playoffs. A bad one, basically. But nah, you can't just sign thousands of loan players from the Premier League reserves. It's like this is not a new strategy.
You can, but it doesn't work.
And the thing is, that shouldn't be a surprise. Like Duncan Ferguson's turned up, like, I've got a brand new idea that nobody's ever tried before. They have. It's terrible. Don't do it. Get down. Anyway, moving on. So, listeners will remember, no doubt, that on Wednesday night, there was a glorious victory in the last round of Should McStay or Should Dar Go, as I very quickly and cleverly deduced that, of course, it was Michael Miller. And it didn't at all take Graham humming his initials repeatedly before we managed to break the code on that one. And my place as the reigning winner, I have a new round for you for today. So
this John's on-show debut of...
I think it will be.
And he's, I would say a fancied competitor for this. I think John's going to be.
I'm looking forward to it. I feel I've built up a bit of a reputation going into this now, and I'm mildly terrified that John's just going to come along and get on like the first guess.
Yeah, this is like it's like an episode of Countdown where, you know, you've won a couple of episodes, and then the new guy comes on and he's like a professor of linguistics from Cambridge or somewhere.
Going to go for like boxing heavyweights, but if that's the direction you want to go, Duncan, then fair enough.
Dictionary corner.
Yeah. Right. Okay. We'll jump into this. I have 7 clues. Should we need them for this one today? And to start you off, I have played in both England and Scotland. I realised I was writing these clues. I think I might be the only person that does them in first person. I like to inhabit the mystery player. I think everyone else just gives normal clues. So, played in both England and Scotland. Any guesses straight out of the gate?
Tommy Abraham.
You know the bit I said played. It implies played to some degree of success. John, any guesses?
Yeah, I'll throw John Sutton in there.
All right. And Carol?
Andy Todd.
Okay. Right, number 2. I have also managed in Scotland.
Jimmy Nicol.
All right. John, any advance?
Well, John Sutton managed Morton Reserve, so I'll keep it that at the moment.
All right. Carol?
Pass, because Andy Todd don't think he managed anyone, so I'll need to think of someone else.
Andy Todd became a polis after he played, did he not?
Yeah. Right. A few of our players became polis. Don't know why.
I thought you said there Andy Todd became a poultice.
Became Polish.
Well, just to, it's like, to draw out the poison.
Yes.
No further comment. Right. right. Number 3. During my time with Raith Rovers, I was sent off twice.
I'm going to stick with Jimmy Nicol for now.
All right.
I do have another idea in my head, but can I remember them getting sent off twice?
John?
No, I'm not willing to for anything at the moment.
No advance. Carol?
No advance.
Okay.
That's a parabola, as we say in Spanish.
Number 4. My managers include John McGlynn, Grant Murray, Neil Lennon, Ian McCall, and Jim McAnally.
Right, you're going to need to go through that list again. So McGlynn,
yeah, give me that again.
Yeah.
So John McGlynn, Grant Murray, Neil Lennon, Ian McCall, and Jim McAnally.
Belter of a player, by the way, got to say that.
Right, any guesses?
Well, it's no Jimmy Nicol anyway. Woft.
Right, I'll give you number 5. I have 199 career goals.
I
Brian Graham.
All right.
And I think that might be it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because he's managed the women's team, isn't it?
He's managed the women's. Yeah. He would have played at Neil Lennon at Hibs.
Mm-hmm.
Ian McCall at Partick. And McAnally at Morton. There's my reasoning.
Who did he play down south? Was it
Cheltenham?
Yeah.
Cheltenham.
Okay, coin number six. I played 71 games for Raith Rovers, scoring 38 goals.
Sticking.
Yeah. And coin number seven, I score when I want. Well done, Robbie. Very well done. that is very, very well played.
It was the goals, I was like, who's got that number of goals? And then I was thinking, like, Neil Lennon, obviously, it's when Lennon was at Celtic. This really has devolved into, like, an episode of Countdown, like, showing you're working. It's like,
the list of his managers, there's loads of names in there that I was like, I can't decide if this is going to make it more difficult or just more frustrating. Jackie McNamara was one.
Aye.
It's like, just I don't know who I would possibly come up with if you told me they'd played under Jackie McNamara. And a few others as well that would have possibly muddied the water slightly.
See, when you said Jim McAnally, I immediately went Peter Head.
Aye, I was the same because he spent so long there.
Might throw you off.
Really good red herring.
He came through at Morton under Jim McAnally. It was obviously under Neil Lennon.
I really do enjoy the fact that Brian Graham just loves scoring against Morton. Like, it's just a fan base that deserves that villain to go up against them. And he does that with such aplomb, just scoring against them consistently. But definitely one of my favourite Rovers players, because he's the type of player that I feel like everyone says this about him, where he's the type of guy where you absolutely despise when he's playing against you, because he's just complains about everything. And it's like that John Baird story about him and John Baird weren't getting on until it was something like they were playing against Ackies, and it was a game they were 2-0 down or something at the start of the game, and then it came back to 2-2, and they were having a go at each other until half time, and then one of them set up the other, and then they became best pals after that, I think it was. But I thoroughly got to respect the guy in terms of the career that he's had and what he's done. He's just been a really good centre forward. So
that's it. I've taken that 199 career goals. That's according to Transfermarkt across all competitions, and I hope that's accurate. It'd be nice to see him get to 200 before the end of this season. Well, I mean, I suppose if it's not accurate, he's probably got 200 already.
He scored at the weekend, and it's probably updated since then. So you'd expect to go over it now.
Goals to his total, but that's exactly that. I loved him when he played for us, would have taken him back at literally any other point. As you say, Carol, he's managing Thistle's women's team and doing very, very well with them as well, by all accounts. And it just seems like a good egg. But as you see, Robbie, that was very impressive. Like, you've done very well there. So you'll have to return with a challenge of your own.
We need some teapot of Dargo teapot to celebrate over the course of the season.
Speak to Blair, I'm sure he'll have that in production as we speak.
Aye.
I said Blair's not been on the last few episodes because he's out scouting the marketplaces of continental Europe and various other places to try and to drum up more merchandise ideas. Right, I think that will do us for today. So thank you everyone for watching and for listening once again. We will be back presumably on Thursday night to look ahead to the trip to Capello. And quite possibly we might have Robbie posing another teaser at that point, but we'll need to wait and see what the schedule brings. As always, if you want to see the Twitter and all the other stuff, it's all in the show notes. And we will see you back, hopefully on Thursday night. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.